I'm Asya Fulu.
Area code 608-256-2001. Donate now. We've got another 30 seconds left in the show. We're going to go out with some music.
All right. Call us.
Hello, baby. Yes, it's really me.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. US officials have confirmed that President Trump paused the sharing of intelligence with Ukraine in the aftermath of a recent fractious meeting at the White House. Mr. Trump had announced just the suspension of military assistance on Monday, but the CIA director, John Ratcliffe, has confirmed the intelligence pause. He said Mr. Trump had doubted, as he put it, Volodymyr Zelensky's commitment to peace. The Ukrainian president has since moved to improve relations, and Mr. Ratcliffe indicated the suspension could be temporary.
President Trump had a real question about whether President Zelensky was committed to the peace process. And he said, let's pause. I want to give you a chance to think about that. And you saw the response that President Zelensky put out a statement saying, I'm ready for peace. And I want Donald Trump's leadership to bring about that peace.
Mr. Zelensky said talks between his team and Washington had been positive, and he hoped they'd lead to results next week. Ukraine uses U.S. intelligence to aid its defense, including for targeting Russian assets. This assessment from Tom Bateman.
This is absolutely crucial information that the US spy agency gives to its counterparts in Ukraine for both strategic reasons in terms of understanding Moscow's approaches to the war, its next strategic moves, but also tactical information, for example, programming coordinates into artillery rockets like the US-supplied HIMARS system. So the suspension of that information will have an immediate effect on Ukraine's ability to defend itself.
The US Vice President J.D. Vance is travelling to the Mexican border to highlight ongoing security efforts to stop irregular immigration. The visit comes as the State Department announced new visa restrictions on foreign government officials who are deemed responsible for facilitating unauthorised crossings. The US Supreme Court has declined a request by the Trump administration to withhold payment to foreign aid organizations for work they've already carried out for the government. It upheld a lower court ruling unfreezing almost $2 billion for contractors and recipients of grants. The Sahel region remains the epicenter of global terrorism for a second successive year. The latest Global Terrorism Index reports that the region accounts for more than half of all terror-related deaths worldwide. Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger have been hardest hit. Richard Kagoye reports.
5 of the 10 most affected countries are in the Sahel, a vast semi-arid region stretching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. Jihadist violence erupted in Mali over a decade ago and has since spread to Burkina Faso and Niger. Two main groups are responsible for most attacks, the Islamic State and its affiliates, and an Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist group based in Mali. The report also highlights a shift in terrorism epicenter from the Middle East to the Sahel.
This is the latest world news from the BBC. Syria's foreign minister has promised to rid the country of the chemical weapons stockpiled by the ousted president, Bashar al-Assad. Assad Hassan al-Shibani said Syria needed technical and logistical help to destroy sites storing chemical weapons. A UN investigation found the Assad regime used the nerve agent sarin and chlorine barrel bombs during the 13-year civil war, killing and injuring thousands. Scientists in Britain say they've discovered how the drug aspirin may help stop some cancers from spreading. The study found that the cheap painkiller boosted the ability of the immune system to fight cancer cells. James Gallagher reports.
There have been hints that aspirin can stop some cancer spreading for more than a decade. Finally, scientists think they understand how. It's in that moment when cells break off the main tumour and try to spread to other parts of the body. Aspirin seems to unleash the immune system, making it easier to seek out and destroy these lone cancerous cells as they try to take root. But should patients be taking aspirin? Well, the medical advice remains no, as there are dangerous side effects, including stroke.
New research has revealed that early humans were producing tools from animal bones about a million years earlier than thought. Archaeologists working in the Olduvai Gorge in northern Tanzania have discovered 27 tools up to 40 centimetres long, clearly chosen and shaped for different purposes. They say this suggests a level of cognitive ability not previously known in hominins at that time. The finds are 1.5 million years old. The BBC has learned that football's world governing body is to give more than $1 billion to teams taking part in this year's Club World Cup. That's more than double the amount offered to national sides at the Men's World Cup in Qatar in 2022. The 32 clubs will split the prize money. FIFA is yet to comment. And that's the latest BBC News.
Hi, I'm Randy, a longtime Wart listener and an Evergreen donor. This year, I will be donating to WORT through my IRA. To lessen my tax impact, I can make a donation to WORT, and this might even lower my Medicare premiums and put me in a lower tax bracket. If you are 70 and a half or older, you can do this too. Why did I decide to include WORT for part of my RMD distributions? Well, it's easy. It's the music. WORT has opened my ears to music I don't hear anywhere else. Donating to WORT is my way of saying thanks to this local treasure. To learn more about RMD donations, visit the donation page on WORTFM.org or email Susan at WORTFM.org. Happy 50th, WORT.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio mic.
Good afternoon, Madison. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow, and this is a public affair. Happy Wednesday. I hope you all are like faring well in this kind of snowy, kind of rainy day. It's really nice to be on the radio because I get to talk to two of my favorite people. So I'm going to start by introducing my pledge rapper, my dear friend, Carousel Bard. Carousel, how are you doing today?
Hello, Ali. It's so great to be here.
Thank you for supporting WORT.
Thank you. I love WORT.
Before we dive into a really important conversation, do you want to tell people why you're here, what you're doing?
Well, and I'm so excited to be here because I feel like it's like the return of the Wednesday host. Ali was the Wednesday host for so long, and then I was the Wednesday host. I was Tuesday, and you swapped with me and whatever, and I feel like I love our voices together. You're like super chill, and I'm like, hey, everyone, let's go, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, so we're just the perfect combo. You bring Thank me you. Down a notch. But I'm here because we both love WORT and love that we're the listener-sponsored radio station. Nowhere do you get the conversations like we're about to have. And it's Pledge Week, and I'm so excited to be here to join you today to encourage everyone to support the radio station that I love, that you love, that we all love. We're the only place where we're going through chaos like we're going through right now. Chaos is sort of an understatement. You have these intense, detailed, listener-sponsored, call in and contribute to the conversation. Conversations nowhere else. No one is doing what we're doing. Yeah. Please call and support the great work that Ali does every work and all every week. And everyone here with WORT, you can pledge by doing two ways. You can call at area code 608-256-2001. Or you can go to our website, WORTFM.org/donate, but you'll find it on the website, just WORTFM.org. And any donation makes a huge, huge difference. But we want to kick it off because we have a challenge grant, right, Ali?
Yes, we do. So me and Carousel are going to give today.
Woo!
And we will match $50. But that means we need people. That means we need like five people to call and give $10.
Yeah.
We're hoping seven people give and we hope that you give what you can. Small donations do big things. But if you've got a big donation, now is a good time to give it. We need all the support we can get. And, you know, these are hard times, and we are going to make it through these times by supporting one another and sticking together. So please give us a call. The number is 608-256-2001. I want to thank our team today. I want to thank Shelly Pittman. I want to thank our wonderful producer, Sarah, and our engineer, Jay. And a huge shout out to Mary Jo, who's out there answering the phones, and she wants to hear from you.
Woo-hoo.
Before we really, you know, go back into Pledge, let's talk a little bit about the conversation we're going to have. I want to introduce Lisa Graves. Last summer, she was on the show to talk about Project 2025. Maybe you remember that show. Mm. I was hoping that next time I talk to you, Lisa, we would get to talk about something else, but you are an expert. You've spent a lot of time learning a lot about Project 2025. How are you doing? How are you feeling watching Project 2025 be executed by our White House?
Well, thank you so much for having me back on. I'm not sure I would say delighted to speak with you last summer, last August, about the Project 2025 agenda that you know was really the agenda for Trump, despite the denials by Trump on the campaign and some gullible reporting by some outlets to let him deny his connection to Project 2025 when it was obvious from his own statements that he was counting on the Heritage Foundation to map out his agenda if he were to be elected. And now here we are, over 40 days in, coming up on 2 months into this new administration with act after act that is part of Project 2025 and then that exceeds Project 2025. So how am I feeling? That is a question. I have to remember that back in 2017, I stopped asking people how they were and just said, it's so nice to see you, because every day, every hour is another violation of legal norms, of statutes, of administrative rules at the whim and caprice of Donald Trump and the unelected co-president, Elon Musk.
Oof. I mean, I felt like the conversation we had in some ways, you know, was so helpful to me because you really clarified what Project 2025 is and what it isn't. And I hear in your answer to kind of my first question that some of what's happening right now is really kind of point for point what Project 2025 laid out. Can you tell us what are the things that are in lockstep with the documents produced by the Heritage Foundation? What are the things Donald Trump has done upon, you know, this initial first month and a half that really represents Project 2025 and what it is and what it's about?
Well, there are so many. It's a little bit hard to know where to begin, but, certainly from day one. Okay, so we saw from investigative reporting that Russell Vought, who is now the head of the Office of Management and Budget, that Vought had told an undercover team of investigators unknowingly that basically they'd pre-written all these executive orders that he wouldn't show them, but that, you know, basically saying that Trump was, you know, misleading the American people by saying he had nothing to do with it, when in fact they had been busy working on the exec orders that he would issue on day one. The head of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, similarly had made statements about the fact that, you know, after Trump, you know, finishes being sworn in, that immediately afterward he would start signing these executive orders. And that's exactly what happened. Trump went and signed a number of executive orders, in particular on immigration, asserting an emergency and basically demanding that there be, you know, wide deployment of immigration raids. And so that was certainly part of that agenda. But the other part of that agenda that was quite clear from the Project 2025 documents was that they intended to disrupt the funding of agencies, that they intended to what's known as impoundment, to basically stop what Congress had funded, what Congress had voted for, bipartisan budgets that had been signed into law by Trump and by Biden, that they were going to basically try to stop that funding and redirect it. We saw a trial balloon of that during the first Trump administration, when they redeployed funds for the wall that supposedly Mexico was going to pay for. And of course, Mexico didn't pay for the wall. It was money that was redirected that was not allocated for that. But this was going to be on a broader scale. And so just this past week, we've seen a statement by Pam Bondi, who was confirmed as the Attorney General of the United States, asserting that the Supreme Court will rule in their favor on these issues of executive power, the power to seize these funds or stop the funding, as well as the power to fire people across the board, regardless of congressional rules for independent agencies or for employees or collective bargaining agreements. And even though today the court has, within the last 24 hours, the Supreme Court has issued a decision not stopping, basically not undoing a freeze that was ordered by a lower court federal judge regarding State Department funding, they basically sent the case back saying, you know, the judge should determine whether it's feasible to stop the administration from freezing funding for foreign aid. And so just to kind of draw the lens back on a bigger scale, what we've seen is unprecedented destruction by Trump and Elon Musk, firing of people capriciously, arbitrarily, really in grotesque violation of the law in terms of the rules for civil servants, alongside a whole series of made-up claims about why they were closing down USAID, asserting, you know, that there were millions spent on condoms for Gaza, just blatant lies. That has been happening basically on a daily basis for the past, 40 some days. And so far, the lower courts have generally been blocking that. But what the Trump administration is counting on is for the U.S. Supreme Court to side with them ultimately on the big cases. So that's sort of where we are.
I think that it's easy to be overwhelmed by this current moment. And yet Project 2025 was widely available. Folks were sounding the alarm during the election back in November. I think you came on air and tried to sound the alarm here on WORT 89.9 FM. I guess I think maybe what I didn't realize when we were having that initial conversation is what we would have to do to combat Project 2025. And it feels so overwhelming, and it feels like it's all kind of, you're like drinking from a fire hose. What are we supposed to do in a world that's being led like this?
Well, back in the summer of 2025, as we were working on our sites, we have a site called Project2025admin.com, which includes profiles of a number of these individuals like Russell Vaught and others, Kash Patel and the gang. We prepared those profiles starting last spring as part of our effort to alert people to the dangers of both this agenda and some of the individuals that they were putting forward that would be potentially implementing this agenda if Trump were to win. And we also had a site that was a little more high level called project2025.wtf. That's the code at the end, .wtf. So those sites, were designed to help alert the American people about the risks of this extreme agenda. Now we're beyond alerting the American people. Now we're seeing the reality of it. And you're right, it can feel overwhelming because it's just been hour after hour of extraordinary acts. I mean, to have our park rangers fired, at our national parks, to have the USAID doors locked and have people sort of ripped out of countries abroad where they were working on public health, trying to protect people in other countries as well as us from the dangers of deadly pandemics, to see our commitment, the U.S. commitment on foreign aid across the board, and in particular to Ukraine, just ripped away. Every single thing has felt extraordinary, and there are several every day, and so it's very hard to keep up. But there are a lot of things happening in resistance, in opposition, in growing a counter to this extraordinary set of dictates by Trump and by Musk. And you can see that in, for example, the town halls with some of these members of Congress, where in, you know, sort of ruby red districts, Republicans were facing really serious questions from their constituents, from people who live in their districts, saying, what are you doing on Medicaid? You know, I can't believe that you're supporting these budget cuts to Medicaid to try to cut, you know, this huge sum out of a program that many people rely upon, in addition to just ridiculous things like Elon Musk calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme when it's been around for decades.
I want to hone in on the comments around Medicaid, because I think, you know, what we heard from President Trump is that, you know, no one who's using Medicaid and needs Medicaid will be harmed by these cuts, that these cuts are about inefficiencies and about fraud, are about, you know, seeing people who are 150 years old collecting Medicaid, I think was how he framed it. Talk to me about, like, who is feeling those cuts and how is that different from what we're being told?
Well, first of all, I mean, the claims of widespread fraud are just false. They're utterly false. You know, they're always in any program as well as in private businesses. There is always a risk of fraud. This is not a throw the baby out with the bathwater situation where you just try to kill a program because maybe you can show like someone defrauded it at one time. That's not what's happening. That's actually what the agencies, you know, police all the time. It's part of what the inspector generals who Trump fired summarily do. They try to protect against fraud and misuse of government funds, but they are not interested in that for real, or they would actually support those investigative arms of the agency, those independent arms of the agency that go and investigate fraud or misuse of funds or misapplication of the law. In fact, what we've seen from Trump is an effort to gut those mechanisms for protecting the American taxpayer, as well as his efforts to gut the enforcement of the IRS code, particularly in ways that affect super rich people who aren't even paying their fair share. So it's a constant stream of disinformation. But let's talk about Medicaid, because there's a particular part of the United States in which Medicaid is used at the highest rate per capita, and it's in the Central Valley of California, which is almost entirely represented by Republicans. These are workers who or people who are living at the edge of their ability to have any access to life-saving health care. They're people who are at the poverty rate or within 125% of the poverty rate, or may otherwise have some disability issues. These are people who are literally at risk of dying if they don't have the baseline access to medical care. So, you know, Medicaid is designed to help people who are the working poor or the poor who can't work because of their disability, for example. And Medicare is for people who are over 65, who qualified, I think, or, you know, this range in the 60s when they qualify, or have a permanent, like, work-ending sort of disability to have access to that program. Now, you may recall that about 15 years ago, there were these ridiculous claims by Tea Party activists, who are really Republican Party activists, you know, taking up the name of the Tea Party, immediately after Obama was elected, when he had done nothing to the tax code. He'd barely been in office for 100 days, and they suddenly had tax day Tea Party protests that were followed up that summer, the summer of 2009, with town halls where Republican activists were carrying signs or saying things like, keep your hands off my Medicare, keep government's hands off my Medicare, when that's not at all what was happening. What was happening was there was an effort by a Democratic president with the Democratic Congress to expand access to health care through the Affordable Care Act. There were other proposals from Bernie Sanders and others. I supported Medicare for All, which was that everyone should have access to affordable health care. It shouldn't have to go through these insurance exchanges. You should just have access like every other civilized democracy in the world in terms of access to health care. But these right-wing activists were ginned up or, you know, riled up by right wing political power players to claim that somehow the Democrats were going after their Medicare, which was the farthest thing from the truth, or the idea.
Lisa, this is what I love talking to you. Why I love talking to you is because it is both kind of what is happening right now. What are kind of the most relevant things we could talk about in terms of Project 2025 in the first 40 some days of this administration, as well as a history lesson. I feel like you are so good at contextualizing this moment and all of the moments that led up to where we are right now. And because I've gotten to have a lot of conversations with you right here on WORT 89.9 FM, I just want to thank the people who make those conversations possible. And usually when I say that, I mean the team that supports this show. But what I mean today is the folks who call and support us. And Carousel, I want to talk to you a little bit about why you're supporting WORT today and ask you to remind people to give.
I mean, I love WORT because nowhere else can you have this detailed of a conversation about the intricacies. You may read a news story that takes you, you know, 5 minutes to read, and it's just you reading it all there by yourself. You may listen to, you know, NPR or other news stations where you get a 2-minute story, and it's detailed and thoughtful, but it ends after 2 minutes. So there's a limit to how far it can go. And WORT gives you so much more. It's just so incredibly powerful. It's my joy and honor to donate to this organization because of all that they give. And you can join us. Right now, we haven't got any pledges yet, and we have our $50 pledge.
We
match.
Have a $50
it's
match.
Out there.
Plus, we
come get it.
The station has also has a challenge grant from Ooh. A generous donor who will Ooh. Double any donation from new donors or lapsed donors. We have 2 donations. Woo! So we used to have a little bell
bing,
that we would ring.
Bing, bing, bing. That's okay. I can do the bell. Boop, ba, ba,
thank
ba,
you so
ba.
Much for giving. We're so grateful. That's 2. We need 5 more.
And let me tell the phone number. Area code 608-256-2001. Or WORTFM.org. You can donate either way, any kind of donation, any amount. You can pay by credit card. We can figure out how to get cash. We can get a check. However you want to pay. You can pay in installments. You can pay in one time.
You can become a monthly donor.
You can give us $5 every month. There's so many ways. And no matter what you give, it makes a huge difference. $5, $10, $100, $500.
Mary, I want to thank you so much for being our first donor today. Woo! And then we have another person who goes by the almighty ruler of the universe.
Oh,
thank you so much for supporting us here at WORT 89.9 FM. This is A Public Affair. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow. I'm on the air with my beloved Carousel Baird and with Lisa Graves. And we're talking about Project 2025. And we're getting into what, you know, seeing Project 2025 in action means for people. Recently, we've seen this huge dip in the market, right? And there is a lot of folks who are predicting that we are charging, stampeding towards a recession. Lisa, talk to me a little bit about the economic impact of Project 2025, right? All of these jobs are being lost. All of these agencies are being shut down. What does that mean for our economy, for people's abilities to survive and pay their bills and have their houses? Not to mention, you know, the things that are being, HUD is being defunded. And that, what does that mean for folks who are homeless right now? Like, we are seeing people's jobs ripped away and the safety net that could allow for them to have some semblance of stability while their job is being ripped away is being ripped away right as they need it. Tell us, you know, what that looks like and what we can expect as this kind of this moment continues.
Well, about a year ago in March of 2024, we reached out to the New York Times Magazine about these issues, about the impact of Project 2025 on our economy and the devastating effect that would happen if the sort of trade war stuff that was part of Project 2025, along with other parts of that proposal, were implemented. And, you know, so we really tried to ring that bell hard in terms of what the consequences would be of this extreme agenda. Now we're seeing it happen in real time. We're seeing significant effects on the stock market. Now, to be fair, the stock market isn't the full economy. You know, there's a project that Mary Batari and I worked on at the Center for Media Democracy over a decade ago called The Real Economy, you know, which was about what is the unemployment rate or the foreclosure rate? You know, what are these other symptoms of the health of our economy? But by, you know, every measure domestically, as well as in comparison to foreign countries, at the, you know, in 2024, under the Biden administration, the U.S. economy was growing stronger. It was the strongest among our allies in the world coming out of the COVID-19 first phase of that pandemic and the massive economic impact of that deadly, deadly disease. And unemployment was low. The interest rates were low. Obviously, there were issues happening in the economy in terms of the effects of bird flu on egg prices that were really exploited by Trump, who claimed he was going to somehow solve the problem with egg prices and then did nothing to do so. But the economy was actually, you know, very healthy and jobs were being added at a good pace. And now we've just seen, you know, basically almost 2 months of slash and burn policies in terms of unilaterally laying off or, you know, firing thousands of federal employees, as well as policies that are just going to drive the prices. This notion that somehow America is going to get rich from a trade war is literally economically insane. The reality of trade and tariffs for the people who somehow voted for this absurdity is that tariffs affect the price of our goods. They don't affect the price of goods sold in other countries. They affect the prices we pay for things like a refrigerator, if your refrigerator breaks, or a car, if you want to buy a new car. Most people haven't bought a new car. Many people don't. Right?
Let's just think about that, though, like, because I think that part of the sentiment that people were attached to, or when I think of the people I love who vote differently than I do, I think part of what they were hoping that would do is force people to buy American, that it would be good for the economy because people would be buying, you know, an American made car. People would be buying an American made refrigerator. And that's how you avoid the increase in price related to the tariff. Is that an appropriate approach to resolving this issue, is to say, hey, the best way to spend is domestically?
Well, you know, it's interesting because on the one hand, there's been a longstanding effort by unions, for example, to, you know, say buy the American label. You know, that's an act of choice by Americans. The reality is that most Americans, in terms of their household consumption, don't buy only American because they're buying goods based on price, largely on price. And that's why big retailers like Walmart and Target have over time been so profitable is because most of those goods are imported from China. Most, you know, many goods are manufactured in China, not necessarily Canada or Mexico, although there's a lot of manufacture that transcends our borders after NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and that allowed for this part of the world, this, you know, North American continent, part of the continent, to work in collaboratively on manufacturing. The effect of that, you know, certainly was that some jobs in the U.S. were outsourced to Mexico because the labor was cheaper in Mexico. And so some goods being imported in from Mexico were lower priced because of that policy. But it's not as though those jobs, like American steel jobs, are instantaneously coming back to the United States. Steel is predominantly produced abroad on a much cheaper basis. Lumber is being processed abroad on a much cheaper basis. And that what that means for Americans is if you know, for example, if you wanted to build a house and you were going to use lumber, the lumber that you're going to have to buy is going to be perhaps 25% higher or more based on scarcity of access to those goods. And that you can go industry by industry with that. And then this trade war completely ignores the interdependency of our countries with Canada, for example, in terms of energy. Across the border from Canada, from Michigan, and other states on the northern borders. Like the idea, it's just a sledgehammer of an approach. And it actually does nothing to so-called return those jobs to America because Americans can compete with that foreign labor, for example, in China, only if we accept slave wages, only if we accept pennies on the dollar, and somehow the minimum wage is completely decimated when it's totally inadequate as it is. And so it's an utter misdiagnosis, a complete misunderstanding of how our economy works, of how trade works, how tariffs work. It's just literally one of the dumbest policies I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. Trickle down.
I think that's saying a lot, because I think you've gotten to observe a lot of really problematic policy. I know that you spent a large part of your career watching ALEC, manipulate our elected officials into voting against the interests of the people that they serve. So to hear you say that this is the worst of the worst is,
it's the dumbest. Because there are other very destructive policies. There have been very destructive criminal justice policies. There have been very deadly gun policies. There's a whole array of bad policies that have been put forward largely by the businesses and billionaires that back the Republican Party. But this trade tariff thing is literally the dumbest policy. Now,
it just lacks basic intelligence and understanding. And I think in a way that is predatory, right? In a way that, you are preying on people's hopes that, more manufacturing jobs will exist in the United States. And I do understand why. I understand when you look at a place like Janesville, where, decades ago, the average employee working, in the auto industry was making about $33 an hour. And now the largest employer is Family Dollar, and the average person working there is making about $13. Why people want those jobs back, right? Like what those jobs mean to communities. And this isn't going to get us there. And it was predatory to tell folks that it would. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow. This is A Public Affair. I'm on the air with Carousel, and we've got to celebrate a little. I'm really glad we're having this conversation during Pledge Week, because this could feel a little doom and gloom. Yeah. But I'm really happy because so far, three people have shown up and let us know that we're doing the right thing. We're doing the right work here together, and we're having a great conversation with Lisa Graves about Project 2025. Tell us a little bit about who just gave.
We have another pledge from Andrew, one-time gift of $100. Woo! That's huge.
That means that $100 was immediately turned into $200.
Yes.
And helps us achieve multiple matches. So I just want to remind folks to give. The number is 608-256-2001. We've got Mary Lou picking up the phone for us. Huge shout out to you, Mary Lou. Thank you so much.
And they can donate online as well at WORTFM.org. I want to tell people quickly about some of the gifts that you can get. Yes. So there's gifts all along the trail. There's a $30 bumper sticker, a $35 patch. I'm really sort of eyeing the $50 level cross body bag. I mean, I love that the like fanny pack from my childhood, it's back in style.
Real.
Woo! So I've been fashionable my whole life. I was just waiting for now.
Yeah. Yes. No, be fashionable like Carousel. Get yourself a fanny pack. Support.
A sentence that has never been said before, but there you go.
Be fashionable with us.
And
I'm going to match you. With the fanny pack energy, right?
Yes,
I'm like,
yes.
You've upped my donation
style,
by reminding me that
style.
I can get something cute.
Area code 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. And I think right now, I am hearing, I am terrified of the economy, right? And I'm terrified of my jobs aren't even impacted. And hearing the conversations that we're having, I'm like, do I want to spend money on restaurants? Do I want to spend money on, seeing my favorite show at Overture? I'm worried about, can I afford, the planes tickets and college trips for my kids and all of these things. What I'm not worried about is where to put my $25 in my pocket. That is so clear that giving $25 toward or any amount that you can give goes a huge way in making sure that we all know what's going on and that we all are educated and we all rise together. WART gives us that. Nothing else is giving us that.
I am so grateful for you saying that, because it is, it's complicated in a time where you feel like the anxiety is palpable, right?
Oh,
like people are worried about their jobs, they're worried about their housing, and we're here on the radio asking people to give and to make sure. We might lose a lot of things. I hope we don't lose each other. We can't afford to lose WART. Please give. Please give us a call. I just want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. My name is Ali Muldrow, and today we're talking with journalist Lisa Graves about Project 2025. Lisa Graves is the executive director of True North Research, a national investigation watchdog group. She is also the board president of the Center for Media and Democracy. Lisa, it is always like so deeply energizing to talk to you, even when what you're saying is terrifying, because you know so much about what's happening right now. And it is hard to understand. And I think a lot of us are hoping somebody will explain what is going on. What does it mean? There's been a lot of conversations about federal employees being fired in mass. And one of the conversations that has happened is that it gets disorienting because it seems like people are being fired and then hired again. Will you talk to us a little bit about that dynamic? My understanding originally when we had this conversation about Project 2025 was it wasn't about eliminating these roles as much as it was about putting loyalists to Donald Trump in these positions throughout the federal government. It now feels like there is more of a sense of eliminating entire departments and roles. Talk to us about who's getting fired, who's getting brought back, what that means. And if these roles are being eliminated, or if people are being replaced with folks who are loyalists to Donald Trump, or if both are happening.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And let me just say, I'm really glad to be here for part of the pledge drive, because you know, spending locally is the way to spend. Spending on local institutions like WORT, spending on local businesses, that's how we need to spend our dollars as part of the countering of this effect. When you think about the dollar store, the dollar store has resisted unionization. It's been accused of intimidating workers, coercing them, bringing in consultants to try to make it harder for people to negotiate for better wages. Those wages you mentioned in Janesville, at the auto factories, those were negotiated by unions. And the unions have been targeted by the Republican Party in Wisconsin and nationally over and over again. And Project 2025 also was targeting unions and unionization, trying to attack and undermine the National Labor Relations Board and the authority of that board to protect workers' rights. So they are not on the side of workers, no matter what the political rhetoric is or the statements in some speech are. I count on what people do, not what they say. And what they've done, what Trump and his allies have done, has been to decimate workers' rights in this country. And that most centrally involves the right to negotiate for better pay and better benefits. When you look at the other parts of Project 2025, you can see that they expressly call for the elimination of the Department of Education. They want it killed. That's what Trump has said he's going to do. That's what Linda McMahon, whose experience is helming an entertainment wrestling entertainment group, that she's in charge of the, quote, last chapter of the Department of Education, trying to kill it. That's core Project 2025. That actually goes back to Charles Koch, who's been trying to kill the Department of Education for more than 50 years now.
Charles Koch of the Koch brothers, who were huge supporters of Scott Walker here in Wisconsin. And I do think the conversation about whether or not Wisconsin is up for sale is one that, you know, it goes back beyond this current moment, right? It goes back to Scott Walker. But right now we're seeing Elon Musk be very interested in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, right? And really funneling resources in to that race in order to control our state.
Millions of dollars by Elon Musk to basically try to have a judiciary in at the top of the Wisconsin judicial system that looks like Musk, that reflects Musk's extreme agenda. The idea of this billionaire, you know, not just buying the presidency, but basically trying to buy the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it is offensive it should be offensive to any Wisconsinite anywhere, you know, from any party that this billionaire would think that he should be able to shove millions into that judicial race in order to try to capture it for the right. And in part, again, to try to decimate the protection of union rights, of workers' rights in the state of Wisconsin, along with the rights of the women of Wisconsin to have access to birth control, access to abortion as health care. But when you look back at the Project 2025 agenda, that's also part of the agenda. The attack on reproductive rights, the attack on workers' rights. And as you point out, one of the things that people were raising a red flag about, and we were doing so as well, was this thing called Schedule F, which was this attempt to basically reclassify thousands of federal jobs as political so that those people could be fired, and that then those political jobs could be replaced not through a merit system, not through a regular employment interviewing process based on qualification, but actually based on loyalty to Trump. And so that is also underway, that effort to reclassify jobs and make them into political jobs so that there's no actual independent merit-based review of those hires by career employees. And instead, it's just, are you loyal to Trump versus our Constitution or the laws? That is going on simultaneously with this just sort of snatch and grab destruction of thousands of jobs at agencies across our government, agencies that serve we, the American people, and our interests. And as you point out, it's been very confusing because some of those orders have been blocked by lower court judges. Some people have been fired, and yet some people have been brought back. And then sometimes they've been told that they're not really fired. You had Trump, you know, waltz into the room, Trump waltz in the room, I should say, really, with Elon Musk and his, you know, Nazi salutes, which he denied, but then they said he was just trolling people by making those Nazi salutes. You have Musk come in and issue this ridiculous demand like he did at X, at Twitter, you know, basically saying, here's a fork in the road, you can take this buyout or not. Well, there's no legal authority for Musk/Trump to offer a buyout of 6 months for federal employees. That's not how federal employment works.
This is so important to talk about. And I also really appreciate you bringing in the Twitter/X comparison, right? Like, Twitter isn't doing well. X is not doing well. So running our country like this business that he is running into the ground is not a good idea. But what is a good idea is calling us up and making sure that we continue to have these incredibly important conversations right here on WORT.
And we have a new a pledge from Jade, who says she loves Ali and Carousel. So, and how can you argue with that? Thank you so much for your contribution, Jade.
Jade, you know that you're like one of my favorite people in the world. I adore you, and I'm so grateful for you and miss you so much.
And if you want to be like Jade and be super fabulous, please join the list of fabulous people donating to our show today. Area code 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. I think we have how many? We have 1, 2, 3, 4 donors so far. We're trying to get to 7.
Yes. So we need three people to give us a call.
We're so close.
You know, give us a call at 608-256-2001 and give whatever you can, whatever you can, whatever you want to see doubled, because your donation will be doubled.
So fantastic.
We are encouraging you to give us a call, to give online, but please make sure we get to continue to have really, really important conversations like the one we're having today with Lisa Graves, who is the executive director of True North Research, a national investigative watchdog group. She is also the board president of the Center for Media and Democracy. And, you know, she's a local lady. She's here in Wisconsin. She's one of us. She's one of ours. And she's the best. Lisa, you know, I think that the hard thing about Project 2025 is that for some folks, it really does align with some of their core values, right? So folks who are like, really, really want to see abortion not given to the states, but made illegal across the country, are rooting for Project 2025. And it's kind of, you know, they're kind of like, well, I don't care if some federal employees get fired, as long as that means folks do not have access to their reproductive rights and abortion as health care. What should we, you know, what should we know about how to move folks who feel like this is the only way that their agenda, that parts of their personal agenda, parts of their personal political beliefs, this is the only access point they have to achieve the things that are important to them, is to, you know, allow Donald Trump to destroy agencies and fire people and hopefully ban abortion across the United States of America.
Well, you know, that's both a good and a hard question, because the fact is that a lot of people who have asserted that belief, you know, follow a Bible that says thou shalt not lie. And yet that seems to be completely dispensable to them. The idea of having someone in a leadership role who's just literally lying to them every day, which, you know, I've read the Ten Commandments numerous times in my life, and it's one of the central parts of the Ten Commandments. Abortion isn't actually in there. The idea of limiting people's access to birth control isn't part of that. And in fact, many religious traditions, the Jewish religious traditions, Muslim religious traditions, have an opposite view of the respect for a woman's right early in her pregnancy to determine whether to keep that pregnancy or not, and to make a decision about her health, including her physical well-being. Most religions actually have not weighed in trying to bar access to abortion, but also ultimately that decision about access to reproductive care is an individual and personal one. And I understand that people feel strongly about the issue of abortion, both for abortion access and against it. But, you know, that's a choice for an individual. The same with gay rights. Some of these same individuals have this deep antipathy toward the rights of people who are gay to marry. If you're not gay and you don't want to get married to another person who is of your same gender, then don't get married. Like, to me, when I think of freedom, the idea that anyone would try to impose their religious beliefs, their personal religious beliefs, on other people who have an absolute right to not follow those same religious beliefs, to have their own religion, the idea that someone would say, because in my religion, I believe that gay marriage is wrong, you, outsider, should not be able to marry. To me, like I have to say it, because like the freedom to love someone, to commit your life in marriage to another human being, is one of the most sacred, it should be an inviolable component of your right to freedom as a human. And to have some other human being say that because their religion somehow told them or manufactured some hostility toward gays, that someone else should know the marry, it's outrageous to me.
I want to lean into this conversation about marriage, and I'm so grateful that you talked about the attack on the LGBTQ community. I want to, you know, say I can't imagine what it would be like right now to be a young trans person in this country, right? Like, I can't imagine what it would feel like to feel this targeted by the executive branch of our government. I also want to celebrate that we just received a donation from Hal. So thank you so much. You're a new donor, and we greatly appreciate you making sure that we make it through this moment together and you giving.
Thank you, Hal.
Thank you.
If you want to join Hal, by the way, area code 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
I think about some of what's happening, Lisa, in Project 2025 as changing the status of women in terms of our ability to make decisions about our own bodies, our ability to protect ourselves from domestic violence, our status as human beings is being compromised by some of what this document, Project 2025, is calling for. And one of the things that I found to be surprising, and it gets into this, you know, what parts of your religion do you want codified into law? Do you want the parts that are generous and gentle and kind made into law, or the parts that are deeply restrictive in terms of other people's personal lives? One of the things that Project 2025 aims to end is no-fault divorce, meaning you cannot get divorced unless you have a good enough reason. I don't know.
Terrifying.
I don't know what that
terrifying
means. I know.
It means that you don't have a choice. Once you got married, we'll decide if you can get divorced or not.
And I don't really get, I've never heard anybody say that they wanted to get rid of no-fault divorce. I've never heard anybody on any side of the political spectrum say, hey, too many people are getting out of relationships and they don't have a good enough reason to get out of those relationships. Talk to us a little bit about why Project 2025 aims to eliminate no-fault divorce.
Well, I think this goes also to some of the other funders like the Bradley Foundation in Wisconsin, which funds nationally and has over the years had a lot of things that is funded to support the idea of a traditional mother-father, you know, male-female marriage as central to our society. And the fact is that there are plenty of parents who are same-sex parents who are awesome parents, and there are plenty of heterosexual parents who are awesome parents. And similarly, there are parents from all different backgrounds who maybe aren't suited to parenting.
Yes, but you know, know who has always kind of been thought of as a not good parent is single moms, right?
Yeah.
This we are a culture, and as somebody who has been a single mom, there is some heat that single moms take in our society. So it's part of the reason that Republicans want to eliminate no-fault divorce is because all of these problems that we have in our world are caused by these unruly children raised without their dad.
I mean, that is part of what the Bradley Foundation has funded, is that sort of attack on single mothers. You know, single mothers who are some of the most amazing people in our society in terms
Heck
of
yes,
you know, so that like having social systems that can support them, like for all parents to have better access to daycare, like that would help parents, single parents, people who have both parents. Like there are so many things in society we could do to help support those parents and children. And saying you have to stay married to someone who is a dysfunctional relationship is not just bad for the adults in that relationship, but bad for the kids who would be subject to staying in a family where their parents have such hostility or animosity toward each other. It's just more of this sort of intervention by busybodies into other people's lives. And if they really were concerned with the kids, they would do something else besides try to make sure the parents stay together, even if they hate each other. They would actually provide programs with great public schools, great great childcare support, great, you know, support for nutrition, but they want to cut all of those programs. And that's part of what Elon Musk is doing, is cutting access in numerous ways to many of those core programs like WIC.
What you're also talking about is a sincere violation of privacy, right? Like, you know, trying to get people to blame each other when they're getting divorced and to do so publicly in order to be able to access divorce seems like such a tremendous violation of people's privacies, of people's, you know, people leave relationships for all kinds of reasons. I have never heard anybody say, I wish my divorce would have been illegal. I wish that our government had stopped me from getting divorced. I think that is a tremendously awful thing to do. There is so much in Project 2025. We've got just a little bit of time left. We've got 3 minutes. We need three more people to give. So please, one person per minute, give us a call and give if you can. The number is 608-256. I want to thank Carousel for being here with me today.
It's been wonderful being here. 608-256-2001. Thank you for the amazing conversation that we're having.
Lisa, what's on the horizon for Project 2025? What comes next?
Well, we do have some new materials on our website. I'm also the managing director of court accountability. And at courtaccountability.org, we have material on this impoundment issue, which is really one of the big issues, this issue of whether our government can be funded as Congress sets that funding, along with issues of this idea that the president can just fire anybody at any time for any reason and basically demand loyalty as part of loyalty to him, not loyalty to our law. And so if you want to learn more about that, those materials are available at courtaccountability.org. If you're interested in who's trying to distort the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we'll have materials going up starting this week on my research website, truenorthresearch.org. There'll be a whole series there starting, I think, tomorrow and for the next week or so. And if you want to hear more about some of our work, we're regularly on Midas Touch, the Midas Touch Network on Legal AF. So we'll have ongoing updates there. And of course, Ali, I would be delighted to come back and be on Wart and with you anytime.
I mean, of course, we have to have you back. And I'm like, you, me, Carousel, we have to continue this incredibly important conversation. It was so great to get to have it with you. And it's not just great to have Carousel here as an alumni of, you know, a public affair, but also as an attorney, as a former elected official, as somebody who is well aware of the consequences of the kinds of things that are in Project 2025.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot thank you both enough for joining me today here on WORT 89.9 FM. This is A Public Affair. I'm your host, Ali Muldrow. Please keep giving, my friends. Please keep pledging. It's not too late to give.
You can donate at any time, area code 608. Yeah. Yeah.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters from Politics on today's show.
Seward is an interesting character who really turns about face and becomes far more of an imperialist as a Secretary of State. Not only does he acquire Alaska, he tries to acquire some other islands at this time. And then Grant also falls prey to this. Now, Charles Sumner, who was the voice of the anti-slavery conscience of the Republican Party, virtually single-handedly prevented the Grant administration from doing that. But there were many abolitionists, including Frederick Douglass, who went along with this.
Frederick Douglass, the great Frederick Douglass. A conversation on how the Republican Party went from opposing the slave power of the South to supporting U.S. imperialism abroad. Our guest for this is Manisha Sinha. She is the author of the book, The Rise and Fall of the Second American Republic, Reconstruction, 1860 to 1920. That's next on Letters and Politics. But first, the news.
To this.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. US officials have confirmed that President Trump paused the sharing of intelligence with Ukraine, as well as suspending military assistance in the aftermath of Friday's fractious meeting at the White House. The CIA director, John Ratcliffe, said Mr. Trump had doubted, as he put it, Volodymyr Zelensky's commitment to peace, although he's now indicated the suspension could be temporary. Wendy Sherman, who was a deputy secretary of state under Joe Biden, says removing intelligence cooperation would be a mistake.
It just adds to all of the things that the Trump administration has given and negotiated away to Russia